You've made it to the holiday weekend. It's going to be a good one. 4th of July coming up on Monday. Waddle will be back on Tuesday. He's been away, and it's given us some room to roam. Friedel was in studio on Wednesday. Cuddy was in studio all day on Thursday. And then today, I saw Robert Mays a couple of days ago at the Vaughn McClure JD Foundation event, which was outstanding, raising some great money for causes they believed in. And Waddle and I have always been huge football in love with Robert Mays. He does great work for The Athletic, has his podcast, and it was nice of you on short notice to come into studio here in the First Midwest Bank studio.
It was nice of you to invite me. I felt very flattered. I feel totally out of my depth as people walk by watching us, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
You're not used to the it's good. You got to lean into it too, and going into a holiday weekend, and it's the summertime in Chicago. As you know, as for people who don't know Robert, so you're from here, right? You grew up in Arlington Heights?
Barrington.
Barrington.
Yep.
I always mess that up. So Barrington. And you still live here now, but you cover football nationally.
Correct. I live in the city. I moved back probably 5-6 years ago. I was at Grantland and the Ringer. When I was there, I was in L.A. And then at a certain point, I came back, and I've been holed up here ever since. We live in Logan Square.
Yeah.
So I'm a local.
And you do great work. And when did you shave your beard? Because there's a story that I want to tell people about.
At some point during the pandemic, I probably thought, you know what? I'm using the Peloton. I don't need to like hide that double chin as much as I used to. So got rid of it. And it is hard for people to recognize me every once in a while.
So then we're at the foundation. I'm talking to Rob Domofsky, who covers the Packers for ESPN. And my hearing, by the way, I was telling Bleck this yesterday, is not great.
The music was also way too loud.
Well, but that's where I struggle most. It's not necessarily I could hear stuff, but it gets very I have a bad filter. I don't know in many different ways I have a bad filter, but hearing I hear words, but I sometimes don't hear what the exact words are.
Sure.
So I'm talking to Domofsky, and you're kind of off to the side. And I even said to you, have I met you before? And I did meet you, I think, at the first time at the Super Bowl. Then you reminded me maybe we met at a Bulls game.
I think we just run into each other like almost physically three or four times.
Yeah.
Just because we've been in the same space for a while.
So Domofsky says, hey, this is, and here's what I heard. Hey, he goes, hey, Selvy, do you know? And I'm like, yeah, good to see you. And we start talking.
I'm being polite. I was not going to say we've met several times, but
and I'm thinking like I'm like okay, I'm trying to, and then all of a sudden I hear the distinctive Mays voice that I've heard on the phone and on the podcast and all these times, all these years, and I just stopped. I don't know if you could tell a minute or two into the conversation. I'm like, oh, Mays. I go, I didn't even know it was you because I didn't recognize you without the beard, and then I can't hear anything. And I felt totally embarrassed.
I was not at all insulted. That happens a decent amount. Most people don't know what I look like, but know what my voice sounds like, which is very funny. But it's okay. Yeah. I'm going to look past it, and I'm still here. I still said I would come on. So Clearly I wasn't that offended.
If you have a football question, now we will still follow the NBA stuff. We'll let you know any of the stuff that happens. Tyler's monitoring all of it. Charlie is too. Nothing has happened with KD right now. The big news of the day involving the Bulls is Zach LaVine has agreed to a max deal, $215 million. There is an opt-out in the fifth year for Zach. Also, Rudy Gobert was traded today to the Timberwolves for a ton of draft picks and players. So that's sort of the NBA thing, and Vooch had a clever tweet. Vooch tweeted, retweeted Adrian Wojnarowski talking about the blockbuster story about the Jazz and Timberwolves trade, and Vooch tweeted, glad my offer for the house I found in Salt Lake got rejected then. Thought that was pretty clever, with a lot of people saying he could be involved with a Gobert trade. But on to football. There's also a sort of a news dumping. It's sort of one of the old school news dumps.
Oh, today's the classic day. This is when you do it.
You're right. And I remember Carmen and I, when we were working back in the day in like 2003, 2004, there was a Cubs Sox game going on. Carmen and I are working nights, and a fax came over back in the fax days from the Blackhawks, and they were announcing we're parting ways with Pat Foley. And it was like the typical Blackhawks Friday into a holiday weekend while the Cubs and Sox are playing, trying to hide everything. Brad Biggs did the story, some of you may think it's no big deal, and it may not be that big of a deal, but the Bears set out to hire a new head coach and a new general manager. They hired Bill Polian as their consultant. George and Ted, the two guys who know nothing about football, were along for the ride. And they wanted to be inclusive, so they put Tanisha Wade in the committee as well, and Soup Campbell, who is a part of player development and had a really good following in the locker room. So five people who could sort of come at it from all angles, come up with some questions from different angles, come up with a good discussion. They land on Poles, they land on Eberflus, and it's announced today, according to Brad Biggs, that they fired Soup Campbell, the same guy who is a part of the committee, to hire Ryan Poles. Robert Mays, does this matter?
I don't know if it matters that much, but I do think it speaks to just the lack of organizational alignment that's happened there for the last, I don't know, 10 years, longer than that. It's this just disjointed element of you have one staff and then you bring in another staff and there isn't alignment between the two. You bring in a new head coach and a new GM and they didn't pick each other. That happens all the time. Here, there's actual alignment there, but there are previous kind of iterations of the staff, literally somebody on the committee to pick the general manager that is getting fired now. So it just feels like they're always trying to settle into some version of themselves where it doesn't necessarily correlate with the previous version.
Right.
And that just feels like another echo of this to me.
Well, what I always have said about George and Ted, I believe there's no coincidence that George McCaskey, since he's taken over the team has not won a playoff game. I don't believe that's a coincidence. I don't believe it's a coincidence that I think they've been to five or six playoff games under Ted Phillips' watch. And they've always had, I always equate it to a pop-up store. You know, the pop-up store happens. Hey, look, we got a themed pop-up store. It's here for the holiday weekend. And then we close it down. The 18 season pop-up store. They didn't sustain or build any business. And then they have to do it all again. And it's because that those guys don't know how to run a football team. So these guys who don't know how to hire a football team bring in two people that they think can help them hire new leadership. And then for whatever reason, the person who's a part of the hiring process then gets fired. It's just, it's odd and it's weird leadership to me.
Yes. And I think that there hasn't been any sort of distilled organizational vision for a very long time. And this extends to the Justin Fields stuff. Is it a huge deal that the previous regime is the one that drafted the quarterback that you don't have to surround with talent? You can make that work. Teams have made that work in the past, but it makes it harder. It makes it harder when you have this guy you didn't pick and you've sacrificed resources and leveraged yourself to go get him. And then now you're building around a quarterback that wasn't your choice. And it feels like that happens all the time with this team, where there's a leftover general manager or a leftover head coach or a leftover piece of this. And then the new regime is dealing with this half-built house that they weren't the ones who committed it to. So that's the problem. Is it just, can it work? Yes. Is it a little bit harder? Every single time.
It's like when Phil Emery, again, you hire Phil Emery, you say, you're our guy, we believe in you, you're a former Bears scout, we love you, but as much as we love you, you're not allowed to hire your own coach. Live with Lovey for a year. Be roommates. Try and live. And then all of a sudden, they waste a year, they go out, and they get Trestman, and then they do the stupid thing. Then they're like, hey, Mel Tucker, we believe in you as defensive coordinator, but you know what? We don't care about your philosophies. We want you to run Lovey's defense. Again, another inheriting situation. The same thing in the previous thing with Pace and Fox. Ryan Pace, we believe in you. We want you to be our general manager. You're young and up and coming. But hire the coach Ernie Accorsi believes in, not the coach that you believe in.
And then draft a quarterback without talking to the coaching staff about who the quarterback they want happens to be. It happens all the time.
The same coach who you're going to depend on to develop that quarterback that you just traded up one spot to number two for.
And you have no buy-in from your coaching staff, who has to be fully invested in developing that guy if it's going to end up working.
It's just, again, that's why I've always said, and I hope Poles hits. And I don't know if, like, I'm cool with, like, Poles is going to build out his staff the way he wants to build out his staff. It just seems odd to the people who were on the committee to hire. And it's very Bears-ish. So
it's really hard when you have bad ownership. Let's just call it bad ownership. And just the lack of organizational vision. When it doesn't really matter sometimes who the general manager is or who the head coach is, unless that guy can really reset things. And to me, the North Star of how this has gone well is in Buffalo. And if you have somebody like that, a Brandon Bean and a Doug McDermott who can walk in, or Sean McDermott who can walk in and really have, all right, this is our vision for how this is going to work. We can totally change this around. It's possible, but it's really difficult when you've had bad iterations of the organization for so long.
So the new general manager in Pittsburgh is Omar Khan, right?
Correct.
So Omar Khan was a candidate for the Bears, and they brought him in, and the word was they liked him, but liked him more as like a president of football ops type role. Well, then why not hire Omar Khan with Ryan Poles to run the team instead of having George McCaskey oversee it all?
Well, this is the goes to the conversation of what is a general manager? And a general manager is a different thing in different organizations. You know, there are teams where a GM is personnel, like that's what he does. There are times where a general manager, like with the Bears, oversees the entire football operation. So I think it's a good question. Do you want somebody who is on the business side and is a conduit to the rest of the organization where you have a football guy running the football side of it? It's different teams do it different ways. Like Minnesota is a good example, right? So they hire Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. He comes in as the general manager. Rob Brzezinski is the team president who's been there forever. So Rob oversees their cap, does a lot of that kind of stuff. So Kwesi's the general manager, but there are people in place already that have overseen the football operation for a really long time. The Bears have never had that. So now you put it on the general manager, and now his purview is huge. He has to do everything, and he's never been in this role before.
Rob, that's my problem is that, so Ryan Poles is a first-time GM. Matt Eberflus is a first-time head coach. Luke Getsy is a first-time play caller. Their quarterback is still in his first time of developing.
He's really in his first season.
They completely fried his brain. He's starting over. He's learning anew. So where does Ryan Poles go if Ryan Poles needs answers? Who does he go to? I know he's got people on his staff, but all that's upstairs is Ted, who knows nothing, and George, who admittedly is just a fan and doesn't know much about football. So that's why I just think the more the merrier, more people in that building who knows football, and maybe stuff like the Ryan Pace thing that happened with Mitch, where you're like, I'm not going to tell the, maybe if there's a president above him who knows football, say, listen, let's talk this out. This doesn't make a lot of sense. Here are the reasons why you don't keep these guys. I know you don't want to be talked out of picking Mitch, but let's go through it and talk about these things. They don't have that up there.
That's why I thought the Trace Armstrong idea was so interesting, because his background, he was a player. He knows people in the business. The fact that he's a coaching agent, he's having conversations about who's up and coming, who's smart all the time. Just bringing in someone who has maybe seen the league from a slightly different perspective to be involved in those conversations, I think can be really good. Hiring a guy like Ian Cunningham, who I think comes from an organization that turns over every rock in Philly. The way they've built that team, the way they go about their business, people criticize Howie Roseman every so often, but I think they do a really good job. So I think he's surrounded himself with people from the right types of organizations. And I also think that his background, Ryan Poles's, is conducive to him succeeding in this role.
Okay, so do you like what they've done so far?
I think that they're in a really tough spot. And if you look at the other teams in the NFL that are in a similar place along the team building process to Chicago, where they've had to tear it down a little bit and they're carrying a ton of dead money and they haven't really been bad cash spenders this offseason. The other teams in that range are the Giants and the Falcons. Those are the sorts of teams we're talking about. They're rebuilding teams. That's what they're doing. They have to tear it down. At a certain point, you need to bite the bullet. This team had no money and no resources. So you have to go get both of those. That's why you have to make the Khalil Mack trade, even if it's really tough to stomach. Because you need to dig yourself out of that hole. It's hard to be in a place where you have no draft picks, no players, and no financial wiggle room.
Right.
And that's where they were.
And not a lot of wins.
That's where they were. The other teams that are in that range, though, the only difference between the Bears and those teams is the Bears picked a quarterback in the first round last year. So all of the problems that need to be solved, they still need to be solved, but you still need to try to surround that guy with talent. Doing both of those things at the same time is really, really hard.
Right.
Because you don't want to be throwing around contracts and you don't want to be making knee-jerk reactions and over-leveraging yourself financially to surround that guy when you need to start this thing over from the ground up. So I think he was in a really, really tough spot. And when you look at the roster, it's pretty bleak, but it kind of had to be bleak based on where they were.
See, and then that's the part that you were mentioning about giving guys contracts and surrounding him. Couldn't they have done more? Like, we get calls all the time. Like, I like what Ryan Poles' plan is. I do. But I worry, are we relying on Braxton Jones to be the left tackle? Like, who is... And Darnell Mooney's nice, but, you know, Velus Jones, is he the answer at wide receiver? Did they surround him with enough wide receivers? Is Pringle going to take another step? Did they do enough at wide receiver and offensive line to help develop their most important player?
I think it's going to be tough sledding. I think it's going to be hard to evaluate him this year based on the supporting cast. Here's what I always say, though, when people say that, and I totally understand that as a point. Who did you want? Who are the guys that were signed in free agency? They're like, yeah, for that price tag, that's the type of player I'd want.
Who's the one from New Orleans who went to Miami, was it? The tackle.
Teron Armstead.
Yeah. So was not...
It was not crazy money, and I totally understand that. But he's in his 30s. He's often injured. I think it's really difficult to understand how you balance spending and rebuilding. Because this is a rebuilding team. We have to understand that. This is a rebuilding team.
And I'm cool with that. Like, I don't need Ryan Poles to stand up at a podium and say, guys, we're rebuilding here. I don't care what he calls it. We're smart enough to see what's happening.
I go back to Buffalo. We did a podcast a few weeks ago, and it was the lessons you can learn from the best rebuilds recently. And when you look at a team like Buffalo, and I'll keep bringing that up, what they did in their first offseason, they signed Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde to free agent deals in 2017 as they were tearing the rest of it down, or right before they were going to. So I think there's a way to split the difference where you have guys that can come in and be culture builders and be real veteran additions, even if you do have to do some rebuilding alongside of it. And I think Armstead would have been a good example of that. That's the type of player where I think you can get on board with it. I think overspending in free agency when you're at this stage, you just have to be really careful about the types of guys you're bringing in and why you're bringing them in. If you can articulate, we have a hole at left tackle. Teron is a bulletproof personality, like beloved leader, incredible person in the locker room. I think that's the type of guy you can get behind, but I can also understand Poles sitting there being like, we just need to tear this thing down to the studs. We need to start over.
When did Buffalo make the trade with Minnesota to get Josh Allen wide receiver help?
That was later.
Was that the year after? So are we expecting next year when they have more money, better draft capital, where they're going to go, step on the gas and go?
That's where you'd hope.
But then what if, like you said, it's going to be tough to figure out who Justin Fields is this year. What if they stink? What if we still come to the end of the season and we don't know about Justin Fields and they have an early draft pick? You have to decide about Justin Fields then, don't you?
I also think beyond moving on and getting a new quarterback, how aggressive do you have to be in adding pieces? The Bills, they were all in on Josh Allen. That was their guy, right? They had a plan for him. And their plan for how they developed him was so, so interesting when you look at it. In 2018, go look who the Bills receivers were in 2018.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
I mean, was it Zay Jones?
Zay Jones, Robert Foster. I mean, it is not a good group. That offense was awful. I mean, one of the historically bad offensive
people
football
were making
from the Bills
fun of
year.
Allen then, right?
He was awful. I mean, that team was unwatchable. They had their offensive coordinator that year was Rick Dennison. McDermott quietly had trouble filling out his staff early on, and so they didn't have an answer for the offensive coordinator spot. They hired Brian Daboll the next offseason, that spring, and they signed John Brown and Cole Beasley that offseason. Not stars, but mid-tier free agents that can be useful players for you. You can make an argument that that's what Byron Pringle is. You know, I understand he's not the most attractive option on the market, and he's not a superstar, but the types of players they want in this offense, he was a really good run blocker last year from the slot in Kansas City. If you look at the way the Packers built their slot receiver last year, they used Alan Lazard in that spot a lot. They like size there. They want people who can run block based on what the offense looks like. So I think you can make an argument that Darnell Mooney and Byron Pringle are those useful players as part of a larger plan. Can we get by with this for a year? I just wish there would have been a couple more low-cost dice rolls. Dante Pettis and Tajae Sharpe are fine, but like the Bryan Edwards trade that the Falcons made, right? The Falcons are a team that's in the same, in my opinion, time frame as the Bears are. You trade a fifth-round pick for a guy that has a little bit of juice to him, cheap for the next 2 years. Could there have been a couple more of those where you're turning over some rocks and it doesn't cost you a lot to try to find some talent there? That'd be the only thing I would say. Other than that, I think it's okay the way they built it.
All right. I want to ask you more about what you think about Justin Fields. Robert Mays from The Athletic is in studio. He's one of the best football minds out there. We will keep you updated on all the NBA happenings. Zach LaVine did re-up with the Bulls, $215 million max deal. Rudy Gobert got traded to Minnesota. Want to talk some football going into the holiday weekend. If you have a question for Mays about your team or the Bears, be our guest, 312-332-3776.
Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You are listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Time for an ice cold Miller Lite. Enjoy the weekend. Long holiday weekend, 4th of July, peak summer. Weather's been outstanding here. A little cloudy today. I think rain in some areas, but I think the long forecast still looks good. Just sunny, grilling out, going to the pool, having a good time watching fireworks. What do you got planned, Robert? Robert Mays in studio with us from The Athletic. What are you, you're a big foodie.
I'm going out to see my mom. So she lives in Lake Barrington now, and so she moved after, like, didn't need the big house anymore. So it is in, like, a retirement-ish community. And our dog is not a good fireworks dog.
Oh, yeah. So, are there many good fireworks dogs?
She's particularly bad. And when we moved a little bit further west, we were in Wicker for like 3 years. And then when we moved to Logan, it's like chaos.
Yes.
Every single weekend of the summer is just fireworks nonstop. And obviously, this is the worst weekend. So we're not doing that to her again.
What does it start? Like a week or two before the 4th? And then it goes for the next month?
Sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to why it's happening. It's just a random Saturday at like 7 p.m. It's not even dark outside yet. So we're getting out of town. We're trying to give her a little bit of a break this year.
I used to live in Ukrainian Village, and we had a rooftop deck. I lived on the 3rd floor, and then the 4th floor was the roof. We had the entire roof. And I had a fireworks party. There was one notorious one where Friedel. I had a kid's pool up there before we had kids. Just, that's what I would do. I'd go to the sit up there and drink a beer and sit in the pool. Friedel's in the pool.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And like Zetterman's over there, like the whole crew and everything like that. And when it gets dark in Ukrainian Village around 4th of July weekend, it is like fireworks in the round. You see them close to you from everyone in the neighborhood. Then you get like a further view from like different parts of each neighborhood. Then you see an extended view. Hey, that suburb's over there. They're doing their show. It's an incredible thing.
It's a lot. It's fun if the dog didn't exist. Last year, there was some going off behind our house. I'm like, where is that happening? It was in the alley behind our house.
Yeah, of course.
Like, this is not happening. Yeah, We're not doing this year. We're going to go chill in Barrington, have a quiet little weekend, and save her from the trauma.
Yeah. Robert Mays covers the NFL for The Athletic and does great work. We've had him on the show from time to time. What is your Bears fandom like these days? Do you still outwardly root being a national football guy?
I think it's harder to do that, and I think it's been tamped down a little bit. But there are moments where it's just impossible for me to get away from it. Last year, 2 years ago, so the 2021 draft, we did a live draft show. It was bare bones. It was my first year at The Athletic. We literally did it in a courtyard over here on Dearborn.
Yeah,
and when they made the trade and came onto the clock, the reaction that I had, I couldn't stop myself. I mean, I have to react.
Was this a Fields draft?
Yeah, it was the Fields trade. So when they traded for him, I was giddy like a little kid. And then this year, you know, it's a bad year. It's a rough year. But that Monday night game against Pittsburgh, my fiance still jokes about it. Like watching me get engaged with it on the couch, like it at a certain point, there are moments where you can't help but get pulled in.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it is now. I still love them. I still watch every game. I'd watch 5 games every single Sunday going on in the noon slot. One TV is the Bears. It will always be the Bears. Like, that's always how it's going to be. I just don't have the hatred for other teams. Like, that's what happens. I don't dislike the Packers anymore because I know guys on the Packers and I'm up there all the time. And the enmity for other fan bases and other teams, that's what goes away. But when it's hard not to be invested in the Bears, I think I always will.
Yeah. I always would say this about the Cardinals. The Cubs-Cardinals rivalry was always big, and I was conditioned to not like the Cardinals. I never hated the Cardinals, like hated, because I wanted to be the Cardinals. I wanted the Cubs to be every year good, where they could reset, win championships, build something sustainable. And I say that about the Packers, too. Like, I know I'm supposed to hate the Packers, and I do. There's parts of me that do, but I also just want to have a great quarterback, and knowing every year you can go to the post, and that year could be your year to win the championship. And I just, I'm hoping for a day where it flips, because I got two kids right now, Robert, that are 8-6, and they're front runners, and they don't want to root for the bad team. I took them to the Bears game against the Ravens, and I think that was the game right after the Steelers game.
Yeah,
and they may have even had a bye after the Steelers game. I'm trying to think, but whatever. My mindset was, okay, this is perfect opportunity. He just built so much momentum in the Pittsburgh game, Justin Fields. I'm going to take my kids to this Ravens game. He's going to show out here at home in front of a sold-out crowd against the Ravens, and I'm going to get them loving Justin Fields. And I don't have to worry about them rooting for the Packers. My youngest likes Justin Jefferson, and they're going to be Bears fans. And then sure enough, like I think it was first quarter, he got banged up. He's taken out of the
and
game.
And Lamar didn't play either. So
yeah,
you're watching Brett Hundley and Andy Dalton.
It was one of the worst games. It was the game, too. They choked in the end.
Yeah, my brother was there, too. I felt so bad for him. He was so excited about seeing Lamar and Justin Fields
play. It was
play.
So cold, too. It was like a cold, rainy,
was
too.
Was that a cold day?
It was
a dreary day. And, like, I think, didn't Dalton lead them downfield and they scored, but then they gave up a late touchdown? I think.
Yeah. It was something like that.
The other game, Sylvie, you brought your kids to was the – or you brought Mason to was the – the Brady game against in Tampa Bay.
I don't know if you know this. So Carmen, Danny Zetterman, and me took our, we used to go on Bears road trips. Mm-hmm. Every year we'd see
it. It's a great family thing to do.
So it's such a great, like, if you're young and with your guy friends, just seeing the Bears on the road is just a special vibe. And whether people have memories of going to Nashville and drinking the town dry, you know, like all these great things. And we did a road trip one year where it was 06, the year that they went to the Super Bowl. Thanksgiving weekend, we went to go see Bulls-Knicks the Friday after Thanksgiving. This is a weird memory. It was the game where Ben Wallace wouldn't take off his headband and he got benched by Scott Skiles. So we're in the Garden. And
what a moment in time that is.
He's like, I was at the Ben Wallace headband game. And people are like, what? What game is that? And then we road tripped that Saturday morning. The Bears were playing the 3:30 game, 3:25, whatever it was, national TV in Foxborough against Brady and the Patriots. That was the game where Rexy fumbled a bunch of times and Brady juked Urlacher.
That's right.
The Urlacher juke game.
That's right. I was like, I don't remember that game for some reason. The 2010 Patriots-Bears game.
Was that in the snow?
The snow game where they just got demolished.
Yes.
That game is seared into my mind. I don't know why I don't remember that Patriots-Bears game from 06.
It was a good game.
Well,
they had a chance. And remember, like, we thought as Bears fans that we'd get the Patriots again in the Super Bowl. Yeah. And the Colts end up beating them in that game. It was a really good game in Indy. And so anyway, we said to ourselves, this is cool. We got to see Tom Brady in 2006 when we were in our 30s. Now we all have kids. Let's take him to Tampa. This could be Brady's last year. He ends up throwing touchdown number 600, but it was never a game.
It was a terrible game.
We had the last row in the stadium, too. Very last row, 50-yard line.
The Bears-Brady games have been memorable in some very bad ways. Like, the snow game was terrible, and then when they played in 2014... wasn't that the game where they just got demolished? They scored
Houston,
like 50 points. The Lamar Houston
ACL
game.
Yeah, that's a celebrate. Good, Charlie.
I remember where I watched a lot of these. Weirdly, the 2006, it was my freshman year of college, so a lot of that time is just fuzzy to me. But 2010, I was in Milwaukee visiting my girlfriend at the time. And then 2014, I watched it in a bar in Milwaukee. That's how memorable and terrible those games were, as I remember where I was when I watched
them. Wasn't 18 the year when they came back against the Patriots at home and Kevin White made his lone Bears play yard short?
There were a couple crazy plays in that game. That was the long Mitch touchdown, and I think there was a special team touchdown involved in that game.
It was, what's his face now in Atlanta who
Cordell
played?
Patterson, yeah.
Patterson ran one back, didn't he, against the Bears on the Patriots.
I love the fact that even though I've been a Bears fan for 35 years, there have been through lines with the experience, and one of those through lines is you need a special teams or defensive touchdown to win these important games. The process and feeling of watching your team play and knowing that if the defense or special teams doesn't score, you're probably not going to win, I really enjoy it. Because it's so comfortable.
Oh, our lot in life.
It's like putting on a pair of sweatpants that you just have had for 20 years. Like, this is exactly where I want to be on the couch. feeling that way when you watch the Bears, there's something comforting about it to me. I don't know what it
is. See, to me, it's more like having the George Foreman grill and forever having to barbecue on the George Foreman grill. Like, it's cool. We all have the George Foreman grill. It comes in handy, super convenient. It's easy to clean. But after the bachelor days, you got to move on. You got to invest in a grill, and you just can't rely on the Foreman.
I remember the maybe it was 2013 or 2014, the second year of Trestman, when they had those glimpses of offense. And I went to write about the fact that it was this surreal experience of having a Bears team where you were excited about the offense. They had Marshall and Jeffrey and Forte. Yeah. It's like, man, this is just a weird experience. And it lasted for 1 year.
It lasted for one year. And I think they were the number two offense. People forget. We always talk about the best years of Bears offense. But as bad of a head coach as Mark Trestman was, that 1 year, they had the number two offense in the NFL.
And the best moment to me of that season offensively was weirdly when McCown, remember that game against the Cowboys on Monday night? I was working at Growland at the time, and I was watching that in the office, and I was sitting there watching the game. I was like, man, this is great. Like, I've never watched a team like this before. This is so exciting, and it's where my love disappears.
It's where my love for Joshy football started, and then that's when we had the Cutler show, and then Cuddy found out that we had Cuddy in yesterday, and Cuddy and I were talking. I go, how pissed were you at me in some of these shows? And he's like, I knew who you were, and I never let it bother you. Me and I let it get over, but he was mad at me that year because I was all about riding the wave. Well, I knew Josh McCown wasn't better than Jay Cutler, but at the moment, they were riding some sort of a Nick Foles-type wave, and I didn't want it to end.
There are these glimpses of offense, and that's all we've ever gotten watching this team. There's never been this consistent thing of, we know they're going to be a top six offense for 5 straight years. That's how you're going to be a contender. And it's kind of the argument against hiring Matt Eberflus, right? You have these teams that it reminds me of the conversation we had earlier where can it work? Yes. Do I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult? Yes. All of these teams, in my opinion, the Bills being the exception because of McDermott, but you look at what happened with the Rams, you look at what happened with the Chiefs, you look at what happened with the Niners, these teams that have turned it around. Having that guy at the center of it all where he's your head coach, he's your play caller, he is setting this offense-first vision for how you build, how you invest, what you're trying to be good at, I think that's the way that you do it. And so having this history that we have, this shared history of awful offense, and then bringing in another defensive-minded head coach as you're trying to figure this out, I understand they're overcorrecting from the Nagy era, but it still is one of those things like, man, what's the best that you can hope for? They have a top 12 offense with Getsy, but it's still a defense first team. It's kind of what it feels like.
I take a top 12 offense.
It'd be amazing. This year, a top 12 offense it'd be a miracle.
Give me a top 12 offense in 2024. You know,
I just want the quarterback to survive the season.
I want to talk to you about that. The emotion of going from doing the show in the courtyard where you were giddy doing a national show about the Justin Fields pick and how you feel about him now. We'll do that coming up. We're also giving away White Sox tickets. It's a free ticket Friday. We'll give away another pair next. Also, the Bulls news is Zach LaVine is back. $215 million max deal. And Gobert did get traded. Not to the Bulls, though. He is now a Minnesota Timberwolf.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
White Sox, White Sox, go, go, White Sox, let's go.
Yeah, let's go and give away tickets on this free ticket Friday. It's brought to you by Miller Lite. Caller 7 for TA right now. You'll win a pair of tickets to Sox and Tigers. This is a week from today on July 8th. You have Robert Mays is in studio with us, covers football in the NFL for The Athletic. Are you a baseball guy at all?
So I was very, very into the Cubs in like the 2015, 2016 seasons when I moved home. It was just like a great thing. It's hard to follow a team on the road when you don't live in the city anymore, especially baseball. And when I moved back and it was on every day, I went to 30 games in 2016.
Did you?
And then 2017, 2018, I went to a bunch of games. When the pandemic happened and the season was shortened, it was just tough to get back into it. And then now that I'm doing the podcast and it's just every single day, my sports fandom in other areas has fallen off in a way that I don't love. So I'm going, we are literally today, we're like, I'm going Mets series, going at least once or twice, like getting back into
it. So you are a Cubs fan, though?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking about my kids. My kids are rooting for the Sox, but I'm good with that. Still a Chicago team. I don't root for the Sox. I'm a Cubs fan. And if they love baseball, I don't care who they root for.
So I'm interested in this because it feels like, because there is no barriers to entry to fandom anymore, like you have access to everything. There's digital stuff. You can watch highlights of any team. How do your kids pick the teams that they love? You said your son loves Justin Jefferson.
Right. That's from Red Zone. That's from the iPad. He will Google, or it's weird. He's 6 years old. So whatever YouTube has, he's scrolling through all this stuff with the sports. One video leads to the next video. You know, he'll wake up and I will hear him yelling about the Warriors. 6 years old.
I love that.
Because he's watching Steph on the iPad in the morning. And I love that too. But the one rule that I have is the Packers. And the way they get into it, first of all, the Sox are good and the Cubs are bad right now. So again, they don't want to root for the bad team. They don't believe in that stuff because, like you said, they have access to everything now. When I was growing up, it was a lot in life. I only had access to the Cubs game. They were on every day when I got home from school. I watched the Cubs, and that's what I became a fan of. And now, but I told them, I said, if Daddy gets Bears tickets, you're not going. If you want to root for the Packers, I will take my friends. I will take your friends. I've even threatened them. So we'll see how this works out, how the threats work. I may have to take a different avenue, but I'm trying to. This is tough for me with the Bears Packers thing.
I don't mind it when it comes. If you're making your decisions based on good reasons, right? If you eventually, if your son was like, I love the Vikings because I think Justin Jefferson is awesome. That's a good reason to me.
Yeah.
Like that. That's as good a reason as I grew up near this place. I don't.
That is funny. Like, it's so random. I grew up near this place, so therefore I'm a fan of you have access to going to their game.
And that's part of it. Like, my dad loved the Bears. Like, I don't know if I would love the Bears as much as I still do if it wasn't so intertwined with the relationship I had with my dad. So the reasons that people stumble upon to teams, especially kids now, because of the way that it is, like with the Nickelodeon broadcast and how consciously the NFL is marketing to kids and what they're after. It's interesting as someone who cares about what the NFL audience looks like and why it looks like that and is trying to not feel too old and crotchety as I talk about it.
Right.
So it's always something I like to ask people, like, how did your kids pick their team?
Yeah.
Why did they do it that way?
It's amazing. And like, people don't understand why Sylvie, you got to put the hammer down on this White Sox stuff. And I'm like, you understand that these are people, right? They have brains of their own. And it's not like I can boss them into every move. The Packers thing, I'll go meathead on it. But with everything else, I'm kind of giving them some leeway.
This is a true story. My high school girlfriend into college, she finished her graduate degree in Milwaukee. So she settled in Milwaukee. She was working in Milwaukee. And when I was living in LA, I moved back to the Midwest to kind of figure that out. And I was going to move to Milwaukee. I was ready to move to Milwaukee. And the hardest part about it was coming to terms with the fact that if I raised my kids in Wisconsin, they might be Packers fans.
There you go.
It never ended up being a problem because we broke up very quickly upon moving back. But if it went down further down that road, I was genuinely concerned that my kids would be raised in Wisconsin. Yeah.
I want to get into the field stuff when we have some more time. Let me take Joe for you in Lakeview. Robert Mays from The Athletic talking some football in studio with us going into the holiday weekend. Joe in Lakeview, you're on with Robert. What's your question?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. So, Robert, I am a huge fan of the Athletic podcast. So this, to me, is a great thing that you're on with Selby. But I have a bone to pick with you. I think that your Bears fandom and your disappointment has bled in to your analysis. The Bears won 6 games last season. If you don't believe that Justin Fields is going to be a bust, the O-line's the same, all right? Like, how do you think they're going to lose more games? And from the way that you and Nate and others talk about the Lions, it seems to me that you think the Lions are going to be better than the Bears this year. So on the record, on ESPN 1000, do you think that the Lions are going to finish above the Bears this year? And go on the record, because when I listen to the Athletic Football podcast, I mean, it's impossible to tell at this point with you.
I do think the Lions are going to be better than the Bears this
year. Oh,
I really do.
Oh.
For many different reasons. Look at the underlying aspects of the Lions roster. The Lions offensive line is good. Not just passable, not average, good. I think that Penei Sewell is going to be even better this year. Taylor Decker is going to hopefully be healthier for the course of the season. And then their skill position group, going out and getting somebody like the receiver's name, who I cannot remember, that was in Jacksonville, that was very fast, that they got on the outside. And Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Is it Chark?
DJ Chark. That's exactly right. Having a vertical stretch guy like Chark with Amon-Ra St. Brown, having Hawkinson there, the backfield that they have, that's an okay group. And I actually thought their offense was well constructed last year. Ben Johnson, who's their offensive coordinator, took over a little bit later in the season, had a bigger hand in the passing game when Anthony Lynn kind of got moved aside. He's going to be there full time now. Goff is totally passable. I think their offense, just talent wise, top to bottom, is better. And their defense still leaves a lot to be desired. I think that their secondary is banged up, unproven. You know, the Okuda thing is a whole big question. I think Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator, did a really good job last year. And I think the talent that they've injected up front gives them a chance to be okay. So if the Lions are the 16th best offense in football this year and their defense is a little bit below average, I think that's probably better than what the Bears are going to be. And that's okay. The Lions are in year two of this. The Lions are in year two of this rebuild. They're trying to figure out what the next step of this is. The Bears are having to take a step back before they take a step forward, and that's all right. If the Lions are better than the Bears in 2022, I don't think it says anything about the direction that the Bears are taking.
Okay, this is interesting, because I do want to build on this about whether or not the Bears could be the worst team in the league. Robert Mays is with us from The Athletic. We'll get into the Justin Fields conversation. I will also reset what has happened in the NBA on a very, very busy day. If you want to weigh in, 312-332-3776.